towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Well, I hope last month's class has stuck with people. We're going to continue to build on that. And for me, at least, the diagrams and the stupa and the pictures of the Buddha that we looked at last month have been a guiding, sort of a guidepost, you might say, for me as I've done the practices. And also, as I've done my breath practices, it's helped me conceive of that experience or the esoteric aspect of that in a different way. So, we can always look backwards as we move forward too. So I would invite you to consider going back and at least re-examining the diagram that we made of the concentric circles and consider that diagrammatic flow of breath, you know, what's happening. It adds another dimension, but I just wanted to do that as a reflection from last month before we move forward. There was a quote that came up since we last met in the Bowl of Sake, and it says this, and it relates so much to our what we're studying here. It says, life is an opportunity given to satisfy the hunger and the thirst of the soul. You know, Mercia talks about the highest incarnation that we can have is that to be a human being. And in Tibetan Buddhism, it's also the same. Some people think it would be preferable to be born into the God realms. And yet in Tibetan Buddhism, they say it's not so. That this precious human birth is the one that is the greatest gift. It's that way in which consciousness can experience life and also refine oneself. You know, that when you study Mercia's teachings and other traditions deeply, you see where they interface and how they influence each other. And again, one of the Sufi principles, there's only one truth. You start to see the commonality. But in Tibetan Buddhism, it is said that in order to take human birth, it's like a turtle being in a vast ocean with the smallest little yolk that once every hundred, I will say thousands, it could be eons, that there's the opportunity for the turtle to rise and put its head through that yolk. That's how rare and precious this human birth is. And the truth is the soul, consciousness enters, it becomes the soul. Remember the diagram. Then we go into the heart, then we go into the mind, then we go into the body. It's a matter of manifestation from consciousness into form. And it is with this form that we can evolve, experience, understand. It's a great gift. Consider that. Let that go deeply into your heart and your mind. I'm going to try to be sure. Excuse me, give me just one moment. I'm trying to connect something here so I can easily move the... Yeah, there we go. Okay. I try to move through my notes. I have to get this down here. There we go. So this body of teachings, you know, I draw from different aspects of Mercia's teachings to try to create a cohesive whole for us. And today, these papers aren't always available, so there's some things that I have access to, but I will, you know, I always put these as a PDF out there for you to study more deeply. And this is from the healing papers. Some of this may be found in the Sufi Message volume on healing. And this is called The Spirit in Flesh and the Soul and Mind. The soul and mind, the relationship of that. And Mershit says, and I do want to mention, I do edit this down. I draw extracts. So if you want to read the whole paper, please go to hazarat-anayat-khan.org. Maybe Gemma could put that in the chat for you to pick up. Okay, here's Murshid's words on this. The spirit in flesh and the soul in the mind. The soul with mind is as water with salt. The soul can exist without mind. The soul can exist without mind, but the mind can't exist without soul. So that level of evolution of consciousness coming into an individuated soul, and then the mind starts to, as the elements form around it, as we talked about last time, the mind emerges. He says, but the soul is purer without mind, and it is covered by the mind. He'll explain it further. He says, the mind covering the soul is as a globe. He uses this a lot as a metaphor. He says, a sinful mind makes the soul sinful. A virtuous mind makes the soul virtuous. Not in nature, but in effect. What does that mean? Not in nature, but in effect. It's like a mirror. It's like a reflection. Because the soul really is quite unadulterated. It's pure in its essence. But it becomes influenced by the elements, the mind being one of them. We also know that that's likened to the air element. Okay. A virtuous mind makes the soul virtuous, not in nature, but in effect. So that's what we see or experience from a particular soul. He goes on to explain, as a red globe on the light makes the light red, and the green globe makes it look green, though in reality, the light is neither green nor red. It is void of color, color being only its garb. So again, just tune into that for a moment and feel the essence of light and life within you that's beyond your form, beyond your personality, beyond your accumulation of experiences. Murshid keeps trying to point us there. There. Just breathe that in and feel that. Now Murshid goes on further to say this. The soul becomes happy when there is happiness in the heart. When there's happiness in the heart, it becomes miserable when there's misery in thought. So here he's now making the distinction between feeling and thinking. I'm sure I've discussed this before, and I know very clearly, I remember at one camp discussing it, these sutras on training the mind that Lord Buddha gave to his disciples. You know, the first one, I think it's the Anapanasa Sutra, where he says, breathe in and breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. That practice evolves through different levels, almost like how Murshid gives us the different levels of the breath to purify. But it goes to that sutra, that teaching of the Buddha to his disciples goes to, I'm thinking, therefore I know that I'm thinking. But he helps us to perhaps objectify this. Because our experiences are so impermanent and momentary, although we become fixated and think that they're real and they're going to last forever. But the soul becomes happy when there's happiness in the heart. It becomes miserable when there's misery in thought. Heart and thought, heart and mind. Maybe someone can help me. If you remember, there was also a quote recently about how we create our reality with our thoughts. It was in the Bolasaki over this last month, maybe even within the last few weeks. If someone remembers it, perhaps you could type it in the chat window for us. Now, Murshid goes on to say, the soul rises with the height of imagination, Again, imagination is related to creativity. Creativity is related to the mind realm. So the soul rises with the height of the imagination. Those of you that artists, and we all are in one way or another, you know that. You become absorbed in your creativity, your imagination, or even in daydreaming. It can be a kind of meditation or relaxation. So the soul rises with the height of imagination, and the soul probes the depth with the depth of thought. Both aspects of mind. Both aspects of mind. The soul is restless with the restlessness of the mind, and attains peace when the mind is peaceful. So again, there are those teachings by Lord Buddha that just simply redirect our attention. It's training the mind, it's taming the mind, but we say, breathe in peace and out peace. Do it with me. Breathe in peace and out peace. Breathe in peace and out peace. Observe your breath. Observe your body. Now I'm going to switch it. Breathe in anger and breathe out anger. Breathe in anger and breathe out anger. Again, notice the body, notice the breath. These are all just concepts. They're not, they could be considered states of mind, but they're temporary. Now we're going to breathe in great joy. Notice the breath and breathe out great joy. Notice the breath. Again, breathe in great joy. Feel the body, and out great joy. Feel the body. So here's an experience. I hope you had it even in these few moments, where we can see that the mind can easily be, with suggestion, altered, and it can influence our breath, it can influence our physiology, it can influence how we feel about things. So use this as a tool. These are called the jhanas of Lord Buddha, this kind of training. The Buddha realm is in with us today for some reason. It's just coming in. Thank you. Okay. Any comments or questions, or were there any experiences that you had that you want to share with how that felt just moving between those suggestions? I'm going to move on. If you have something, you can always type it in the chat window.
Sorry. I was going to comment about the breathing and of the anger. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do it. I had to force myself to do it.
Yeah.
Just felt such stress in my body and rigidity. I couldn't wait for that to be over.
And that's how it should be. Hopefully we can change our condition by changing our thoughts, you know, and using our imagination. It's true. I felt that. I felt a constriction, you know, especially in my chest. So, and some people may have felt it in their solar plexus or their abdomen. It's a good exercise because we can see just at the suggestion of an emotion how it can shift for us. So I'm not saying to bypass anything. I think that, you know, one of my mother's great teachings was, when you're upset, cry till you can't cry anymore. So I'm not saying to not feel, but I'm also saying to not get so fixated to think that anything is absolute or concrete or too real, because it's all shifting and changing.
You know, one thing that comes to my mind when you say that is, a person who is continuously experiencing anxiety, you can see how it's going to impact the physiology of their body over time.
Absolutely. And yet I don't want to dismiss the fact that there are some physiological reasons for people feeling that. And so You know, modern medicine is incredible in being able to help people if there's a clinical biological reason, and people do suffer from depression, and those of us that don't can't really understand that state. There's a commercial now on TV for that. It's kind of a commercial in the U.S. for people to get online help. So people will say, it's just a face and someone speaking, and it's like, it's about having depression. And it's like, people really try to help. And then there'll be different voices and people saying, just be happy, or just think about something else, which is kind of what I'm trying to show us. But, you know, again, or you have everything to be happy for. Look at all the blessings in your life. And the person just sitting there going, you know, like, that's not helpful. So I'm not suggesting that. Okay. I'm suggesting, because that is a really important thing to remember, that just as there's diabetes and heart disease, there are things that happen to the brain chemistry that can require more to stabilize or to help move through a condition. So I want to be really mindful of that and respectful of that too, because I can understand that. And I've seen it in my life and with my friends. And so I never want to be a bit disrespectful in that way. But those of us that are fortunate enough to not suffering in that way, we can alter things for ourselves. So take these as tools. Murshid goes on to say, so he gave this example of the soul is restless when there's restlessness in the mind. It's peaceful when there's peacefulness in the mind. And he goes on to say, none of the above conditions of mind changes the soul in its real nature. But for the time, it seems to be so. So if we look back on our own lives when we've been happy, or we've been sad, or we've been frustrated, or we've been whatever those things are, you know, we start to identify that that's us. But in truth, it's a transitory experience that will pass. And we need to, that we can tether ourselves to. And it will help us move through these states. So the real nature of the soul isn't those things, although it may seem so for a period of time. Murshid tells us, the soul is a bird of paradise, a free dweller in the heavens. The soul is a bird of paradise, a free dweller in the heavens. Its first prison is the mind, then the body. So we get these layers and layers over this first consciousness, then soul. As the elements move in, it becomes more and more concretized. And in this way, it becomes not only limited, but captive. So now we're talking about how to free ourselves from this, or to remind ourselves frequently. The practices can help us with that. And Murshid says this, take note. The whole endeavor of a Sufi in life is to liberate the soul from captivity. The whole endeavor of a Sufi in life is to liberate the soul from its captivity. Which one does by conquering both mind and body. And so that's why we see in these traditions, all the spiritual traditions really, that there is this component of training the mind, prayer, meditation, and also the body, you know, how important it is to pay attention to the body, to exercise the body, feed the body, rest the body, sometimes push the body a little bit. It's almost like being a spiritual athlete. You know, can we push ourselves a little bit? Some of us are taking up fasting one day a week. I had mentioned this to someone, and some people are taking it to heart. Murshida Vera asked me from the very beginning with my first readings and my first practices. First of all, to learn the prayers by heart. Second of all, to do my breath practices every day. Third of all, to study. And she prescribed the inner life, the gathas, and the unity of religious ideals. Those were my main prescription, in case you want to note that. And she asked me to fast one day a week. And she asked me particularly to fast on Thursday. I don't know that that really mattered, but there were probably some reasons for that. So it helps to control the body when we can control our bodily appetites. And for other health conditions that are sort of ongoing but lessening, I've been doing intermittent fasting, where I go for an 18-hour cycle of nothing to eat and then being mindful of what I eat after that. So it's helpful. And also just to control those appetites and, in a way, kind of deny oneself, it's good. And I know there are some of you here that are really good at that and have been an example for me over the years. I won't mention any names. Scott, you're a good one. I know you are mindful in that way, so thank you for your inspiration. So how, when we talk about releasing the soul from its captivity, it's almost like, you know that story about the parrot that was the king's parrot? You all know that story? You might recall it. As I tell it, you'll remember. So the king had this parrot. Oh my God. The parrot was in a gold gilded cage. The parrot himself had servants, and he was, oh my God, he had the best food. He had the best conditions, you know, he had just the right amount of sun, just the right amount of air. You know, everyone was tending to him. His food would come to him on a platter, you know. Well, you think that parrot was really happy being in that cage? We're in that cage. We're that parrot in that cage. You get me? So the story goes that the parrot had sent a word to the forest. Some people were going on a hunt, and it's like, please take a message to my brothers and sisters in the forest, and please bring a message back. And the message back was just basically to continue to seek freedom and to be happy. And with the words of that, the parrot dropped dead in his cage. Oh, there was a big ceremony. They got a big, you know, special platter to put the bird on to cover it up. There was a big procession. They went to start to bury the bird, and the bird flew away. So liberating the soul from its captivity is to learn, Murshid's giving us these indications, to free ourselves from the prison of the mind, to free ourselves from the prison of the, I'll say, he says body, but I would say appetites of the body or desires. Those are all things that keep us captive. We're running after certain things thinking they'll make us happy. And then in the end, it's so momentary, and it's not. It's gone, and then the happiness leaves. But where's the enduring happiness? So the Sufis have this saying, to die before death. Die before death. And that doesn't mean anything in the physical capacity, but it certainly does in the spiritual realm, where we start to understand that our accomplishments, our appearance, our possessions, our personality, all of that is transitory. And what we're really trying to do is constantly remind ourselves of this soul's purpose to be free. Now, again, in the Buddhist tradition, we could say that we're trying to purify our karma. By purifying our karma, we can be of more helpful service to others. And we can be of benefit to others. Okay, so are there any practices? I'm asking the question, but I'll answer it myself. Are there any practices that are helpful to us to help remind us to free ourselves from the prison. Remember this little parrot? He played dead so the cage would open and he could be free. So when we do this practice, think of that. We're opening the cage door to be free. Those things that confine us and imprison us. So the words, and you all know these because we say them so frequently, but we're going to talk about even a deeper meaning, is yah fatah. Yah fatah. Okay. So the repetition of yah fatah opens the heart to love and ecstasy and to the inner light of the soul, which is what we're talking about, this light. You know, not what's covering the light, but the light. So it opens the heart to love and ecstasy and the inner light. It opens or it rents the veils of darkness, the covering. It removes those over the heart. And by doing so, it uncovers the light within. And lastly, it's a dynamic process that takes us deeper and deeper and deeper into opening. So again, you've heard me use that metaphor of peeling the layers of the onion. And you know, sometimes the outside of the onion, it makes us cry, you know, the tears come, that can be harsh, it can burn. But when you get to that sweet core of the onion, it's almost sweet and divine, hidden in there. So this is what we're doing, this yah fatah. We're opening the cage. Are you game? So we're gonna use this practice, and you can even, you know, Murshid Sam taught the gesture if you want to do it. I'll be counting with the beads, but it was this hands together like this, and then opening and your hands going out. Yavita, the energy opening up and going out. So you can do that if you want to for, you know, a while, and then you can just let it become more subtle. But that is a walking practice that Merchant Samuel Lewis gave to his students. So, here we go. Yah fatah. 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 Notice the sound. Yah fatah. Like popping the lid off of something, or like the champagne cork comes up and it's like the effervescent light emerges. So yah fatah. 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 Yah. Now we whisper, just fata, 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 Now, silently, going deeper and deeper and wider and wider and higher and higher. Yavata. Opening the doors and the windows, even kicking down the walls, so that all that remains is space and light and love. And we talked about soul and mind together. That was that last section that we just referred to. And now we're reading from, I heard something happen in the other room, and it was Parker. I don't know if he fell off the bed. Sometimes he's like Snoopy, he gets on his back like this, and I always say, "You're too close to the edge of the bed, Parker. Move over." I think he might have rolled off. Anyway, I don't know if you heard it. But here we are. This next group of teachings, sort of that sequence we talked about, soul and mind, and now we're going to talk about mind and heart. Okay, remember, consider that diagram we looked at last month. Again, it's online, you can refer to it. And this is from Sufi Message Volume 2, titled The Cosmic Language. And this is mind and heart. And again, the heart as a lantern. He keeps using this as a metaphor, very important immersion. He says, if we imagine this heart as a lantern, then the light in the lantern makes it the spirit. The light in the lantern makes it the spirit. Again, tuned to that deepest part. Where there's just light, light, divine spark within. Nayak Khan says, we call the heart a lantern when we do not think of the light. But when there is light, then we forget the word lantern and we call it light. Light, light. When we call the heart spirit, it does not mean spirit devoid of heart or void of heart, as it does not mean light without lantern, but the light in the lantern. So again, we're that lantern. And just like when you go to the market, or there was a wonderful lamp shop in Kansas City. Some of you went with me. Maybe it was Savitri and Gemma. We went to look for a special shade. My mother had a beautiful Asian, I think it was originally some sort of urn or vase that her father had made into a lamp. Beautiful. And it had birds of paradise on it and little lions on the side, the heads. It was very cool. But it needed a lampshade, and it needed to be repaired a little bit. And so we went and we looked at all these different shades, and just the right proportion, just the right size, and just the right subtlety so that the light could come through. And we even picked just the right finial for it, the right jewelry, you might say. But it's like that. You know, we are in all these different bodies, these different shapes, the different colorations, the different sizes, the different degrees of maturity, and yet there's the one light, and that connects us. And I want to encourage you, again, as you're doing your practice, think of your spiritual companions and unite your light with theirs. It amplifies the practice. And even if there's one amongst us that, for whatever reason, can't focus or is in a state where the practice seems almost impossible to handle, could be busy, we might have somebody, you know, like Hayat, her practice has been taking care of, you know, her husband. So we then assist and uplift her with our practice. We dedicate our practice to each other and to the world, which certainly needs it so much. All the people that are in despair, we offer it to them. All of us who might experience despair, we offer it. Okay? The light, the lantern is the container for the light. I mean, you can't just have fire floating in the air. So you need the lantern. But we shouldn't confuse the lantern for the light. Okay? So he says, the right use of the word spirit, however, is only as the essence of things. Now, think about all those physicists that tell us the same thing. I mean, the ancient wisdom and the new science, is they're mapping onto each other perfectly and explaining each other. So the right use of the word spirit, however, is only as the essence of all things. So the light, spirit. If you're in Japan, there's great care to objects, because they believe there is a presence, there is a soul there. I mean, you don't see things discarded in the same way. They're properly taken care of if they're going on to their next incarnation, so to speak. So we must think of things in this way, if we can, that everything has a soul. And even if that's too hard to understand, then think about everything that's been created. There's been someone that's, or a series of people that have contributed to its manufacturing. And if that's so, then there's the energy of each individual that touched that coming into form. Just as we have been influenced by the various spheres of existence coming into material form. It's not much different. And then we can really respect that. I think in some ways that's the essence of Zarat, is to help people understand that. A different kind of way of thinking of the environment. Now, Anayat Khan goes on to say, the essential light and life from which all has come, that is the spirit. The essential light and life from which all things have come, that is the spirit. Does that phrase sound familiar to any of you? It's a good study. Go into Mershit's teachings. And again, the Hazrat-Anayat. Did you type that in there for us? And Gemma, I don't see it anywhere. But Hazrat-Anayat Khan with hyphens between all the words .org. And just type in light and life and see how many times it comes up. Very important teaching of Mershit's. I'm going to just look at the rest of my notes because I want to see if we have time, and I think we do. Let me just complete this one thought of Mershit's for us. the essential light and life from which all things have come. That is the Spirit. But when we use the Spirit, this is also in a limited sense. Just as light is the all-pervading light of the sun, and at the same time, the light in the lantern, which we call light also. So this is like big L, you know, big L. So I think I'd like to pause here, and I'd like for us to do that breath practice that uses the breath cycle of five different cycles of breath. And the phrase is going to be, and I'll talk us through, you don't have to cling to this, I'll help us through it. Murshid gave the phrase, I inhale divine light and life when we breathe in, and then breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. And I want to emphasize there is that change of words. Breathing in, it's light and life, and breathing out, it's life and light. So it flips, it changes. It's as if we're moving from drawing the very subtle to the more, from the formless to the form, from the unlimited to the limited. And then we reverse that process and give it back again. And in a sense, those of you that know the practice Tonglen, this is a form of Tonglen. Okay, so the first breath, I'd like for you to concentrate on both nostrils. And you're going to breathe in, and I'll repeat the phrase. Breathe in through the nose. I inhale divine light and life. And breathe out through the nose. I radiate divine life and light. And breathe in through the nose. I inhale divine light and life. And breathe out. I radiate divine life and light. In, I inhale divine light and life. And out, I radiate divine life and light. And in, I inhale divine light and life. Breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. Last time, I inhale divine light and life. And out, I radiate divine life and light. Now just pause and feel yourself. It's always good to pause and look at mind, heart, consciousness, body. The next cycle is breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, in through the nose, and out through the mouth. We repeat the same phrase, and I will repeat it for us. We breathe in through the nose. I inhale divine light and life, and out through the mouth. I radiate divine life and light. I'm going to pause here for a moment because I want you to realize that we're moving the breath in different directions. These are almost like internal yoga postures, that we're taking the breath, moving it different ways. Okay, it's a very elaborate teaching. I don't need or really want to get into that in this moment. We don't have time, but to be aware that that's what's happening. So one sort of stretches us, one sort of goes down deeper, one goes up, one goes in different motions. Most of you understand that. You've done this practice. If you need more information, we can certainly make that available. But this is enough for now. But think of it as an internal yoga of breath, not only on your organs, but your subtle bodies, the Akashic record that surrounds us. So again, we'll begin again with this series of five, breathing in through the nose. I inhale divine light and life, and out through the mouth. I radiate divine life and light. I inhale, nose, I inhale divine light and life. Mouth, I radiate divine life and light. In through the nose, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the mouth, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in through the nose, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the mouth, I radiate divine life and light. Last time through the nose, I inhale divine light and life. Out through the mouth, I radiate divine life and light. Take a moment. The next breath we'll do, we'll go breathe in very subtly through the mouth. We're going to breathe in and we'll breathe out through the nose. So that's an ascension of the breath or the motion of the breath. Breathing in through the mouth, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the nose, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in through the mouth, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the nose, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in through the mouth, I inhale divine light and life. And out through the nose, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in through the mouth, I inhale divine light and life. And breathing out through the nose, I radiate divine life and light. Last time, I in through the mouth, I inhale divine light and life. Out through the nose, I radiate divine life and light. Tune in to the light. And let your light shine. The last breath is in through the mouth and out through the mouth. Murshid says that it's in the motion of like a zigzag, like a leaf getting caught in the wind. I also like to think of it almost at that we're becoming more etheric, as if we're a screen door and the light and the life is passing through us. So whatever works for you, some other metaphor may come up, maybe that you've had a different experience with the practice. It's all good. It's what's important for you, but I share those things if they're of any assistance. So we inhale through the mouth. I inhale divine light and life. And we breathe out through the mouth. I radiate divine life and light. And breathing in, I inhale divine light and life. And out, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in, I inhale divine light and life. And breathe out, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in, I inhale divine light and life. And breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in through the mouth, I inhale divine light and life. And out, I radiate divine life and light. Murshid gave the practice on the final breath, which is in through the nose and out through the nose, in a very subtle breath, completes the cycle. I'll repeat the prayer Nyas with instructions. And just listen to the words as you breathe in and out. So breathe in, beloved Lord Almighty God, and breathe out through the rays of the sun and in through the waves of the air. And out through the all-pervading life and space and in. Purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray, release out, heal my body, heart, and soul. He prescribed this three times, so breathe in. Beloved Lord Almighty God, breathe out. Through the rays of the sun, breathe in. Through the waves of the air, breathe out. Through the all-pervading life and space, breathe in. Purify and revivify me, hold your breath, and I pray. Release, heal my body, heart, and soul. Breathe in. Beloved Lord Almighty God, out through the rays of the sun, in through the waves of the air, out through the all-pervading life and space, in. Purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray, out, heal my body, heart, and soul. Then he suggests that after that, we do the practice. We talked about it last month. I'm going to stand. I'm going to actually go around the back side. You'll be able to see me in the mirror because I want you to see this practice and do it with me. Okay, hold on just a moment. Got to wiggle out of my space here. I hope you can see me underneath this chair. And you may stand if you wish. You can remain seated also. Gemma, can you see me if I make this motion? Can somebody tell me what's going on? Are you able to see me and follow? Could someone unmute and tell me, please?
I'm able to see you. You're a little dark.
A little dark. I don't know how to change that for you, but maybe if I come...
Maria, I think it's better when you wiggled out, when you come out of the table, you could... Okay.
Is this better? Okay.
You're still a little dark, but yeah.
You can there. See my motion, right?
Yeah, you can see your motion better.
Okay. So, the light's behind me. So, okay, so you're going to do this with me. We're going to put our hands up. You're going to breathe in. I come from the perfect source, and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold, the light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. Down, I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. Remember, your hands go out like the little bird getting ready to take flight. That's Mersha's instructions. Can you see that? I don't know if you can see that. The hands are like here. Okay. The hands are going out like that, like a little bird at your side. Okay. One more time. Breathing in. I come from the perfect source, and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. Breathe out. I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. One more time. Breathing in, I come from the perfect source, and I am bound to the perfect goal. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. I live, move, my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. Now, Mershad says, this offers us a great protection. And I trust that. And I do that practice. Again, last month we offered that. So if you go to the archives, you'll see that practice is there, with instructions. And I would encourage you to take that. Now the question is, why don't we say the future? No, the future hasn't happened yet. But the past has occurred, and the present is now. And these are the things that influence us and make impressions. And we are wanting to clarify the impressions just as we want to polish the lamp. You know, it's like I have these Turkish lamps here, and the more they're clear, the brighter the light shines out. So that's us. We're polishing the heart, we're polishing those levels of our being, and we're allowing the light to pour forth, not for just our own benefit. Certainly the light illuminates our own awareness, but also it illuminates the world. We can share that light with others. And it's good to be skillful with that light. Knowing when to, you know, it's almost, I don't know what that thing that they call when you can make the lights brighter and less. But you know what I'm talking about. So, you know, knowing when to let the light go a little higher or brighter, and knowing when it might be too harsh for someone to become more subtle. There's a skill in that, too, to learn that. That comes with practice. And you're all great practitioners, so I have no doubt that you understand that. Well, we're at 1 o'clock, but I do want to do one more practice. Do you have time to stick with me? If not, you can leave. That's it, and then we'll have our public service announcements and any question and answer that you may have. So the last practice has again to do with light. Surprise, surprise. Practice is Yanur. But we're going to do this in tandem with two other Wazifa, sacred words, sacred names, Yahai and Yawahab. You can also say Wahabo if you want. It's commonly given in that way. Yanur is the light that illuminates our heart. It's the light of wisdom and the spirit of guidance. It's that divine light that clarifies things for us. We're looking for clarity, illumination. In all those realms of that concentric circle, think about it. The next sacred name is Yahai. Yahai. Yahai is filled with vitality. Listen, when you're tired, say this practice. It will wake you right up. Yahai. Yahai. Just do it, and it gives you energy. It increases the life force. It allows you to feel freedom from whatever is constricting around you. Just Yahai, Yahai, Yahai. It's an antidote. It's an antidote for grief and sorrow that's held in our hearts. So you're feeling that? Again, we're not saying dismiss it. We're saying work with the energy. Grief, sorrow, happiness, anger. It's all energy at one level. Use it, transform it, and Yahai can help you do that. All right, very important practice. Quick story about Yahai. So I was at Lama Foundation. This was some years ago. There was a large group there. It was for the Dervish Healing Order training and to do retreat. And many of you know Murshid Saul Baradowski. He's with the Sufi Rouhaniyat International. And he was leading it. He's the head of the Dervish Healing Order. And he wanted us, and you know, the path going up from where the main dome is, where the people met for the classes, and that where also where the kitchen area is a rather narrow path. And it's up, you know, it's at an elevation to get to where Murshid Samuel Lewis's burial site is, his Darga, which is now quite beautiful. There's been Pir Shabda Khan did a wonderful job in sort of raising funds and getting that project negotiated and built. It's quite beautiful. I'm sure some of you have seen the photos of it or have had the opportunity to visit. At any rate, the path is like this. And, you know, there are people of all ages, and so some people have maybe a little hard time with the elevation and the path. And guess what the practice was? We did all the way. He said, this is going to elevate us and get us to that special site. It was Yahai, Yahai, Yahai. And we got up there. It was like we had wings on our feet, and we were being lifted up. So you can use it that way too. You have some housework you want to get done? Yai, yai, yai. Use it. Integrate your practices into everyday life. Washing the dishes. Yai, 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 yai. Use them. They're tools. Okay, so think of that. Use that practice. So Noor is that light. I feel a little dull today. I'm going to use some Noor. I'm going to bring that divine attribute in, you know, to offer light into the world, light to myself. I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling sad. Okay, those are real. Well, they're not really, but you know what I mean. They seem real. But I'm going to transform that. I'm going to bring in this life energy, and I'm going to free myself, and I'm going to use that and transform. You know, these are natural processes. I mean, I'm not dismissing grief or sorrow. I mean, God, you know, anyone that's lost someone significant to them, or even some loss, personal loss in one's life, it's a deal. Please don't misunderstand me that I mean that, oh, you're going to say this word and it's all going to magically go away. But I'm talking about the energy of these emotions can be transformed for your good and the benefit of the world. Wouldn't you think that some of the people in the Ukraine need some yahai? It gives courage. It helps people move from one condition to the next. We can offer these practices for the benefit. We might not be able to do much other, but this is something we can do to help the world. And also in Russia, you know, I mean, there's so much conflict going on, right? Confusion. Can offer clarity. The Noor offers clarity. The Yahai gives energy to move forward, courage, strength. Our last sacred word that we're going to say is Yahwahab. Yahwahab, Wahab. The sacred word that helps us move from one condition to the next. It's like a stream or a flow. Rashida Vera always told me, imagine again this stream passing the heart from left to right, again the limited to the unlimited, moving us forward. Whenever I'd get stuck, she'd remind me to use this practice. I'm stuck. I feel so stuck. I can't move. You know, use Wahab. And it's identified again with this stream flowing continuously from the divine source. So it's like, Yah Wahab, Yah Wahab. Yahwahab. Okay. Wahab also helps us to realize, it sort of polishes the windshield of our heart and our mind, or polishes the lantern, like we said. And we realize that everything we need in life is already there. It's present and it's flowing in that stream. But it's like, I don't even know if they have them anymore, but you know, the old fashioned radios where you had to tune in, you know, you're tuning into that, to that wavelength, that whatever we feel we need in life, it's already there. And we're making ourselves aware that it's present and it's flowing in a stream through our lives. Okay. And then we return again to Yanur, then we go to Yahai and Yahwahab. So I might suggest, because I think, again, body prayer is important, let's lift the head slightly, think of the crown, above the crown, and through the crown, we're going to say, let me describe it, and then we'll do it together. So it's going to be Yanur, breathing in, then we start to transform to breathing out, Yahai, Yahwahabo. So I've been working with this practice the last month myself, in addition to the practices from last month, so I've been doing it this way. You can watch. Yanur, Yahai, Yahwahabo. So in a way, it's almost like the movement of the zikr, okay? So let me get my beads to count here. Is it clear? Is everything okay for you all? Can you follow me? Okay.
May you explain, please, what those words mean one more time?
Okay, so Yanur is divine light. Very simply, it's divine light. It's that aspect that opens us to the divine wisdom and guidance. Self-illuminating awareness that comes through the divine. So just simply think of divine light, not necessarily physical light, but it can be that too, but it's this light that comes from within, the soul's light that's connected to divine light. Yahai is life. It means, oh, divine life. And it creates a vitality, and it opens the inner life and light of the heart. So it helps to add an extra oomph to that Yanur. And then Yawahab is like this continuous flowing of a divine source through our lives. So it's this movement, okay? Does that help? Was that Ella that asked the question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, it helps when you do the practice. In some ways, we almost have to let go of the thinking about the practice and get to the energy of the practice. And then if you work with this, the realization will come. You'll start to experience it. Okay? So let's try. So again, we're bringing in the light. Then we use Yahai to amp up the light, give that light even more force, more energy. And then Yawahabo, it's like it flows through our entire being. Okay, a continuous stream of blessing. So head up, concentrate on bringing the light in through the crown. Yahai, no, sorry, Yanur, Yahai, Yawahabo. 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 Yanur, Yahai. Yawahabo. Yanur, Yahai, Yawahabo. Yanur, Yahai, Yawahabo. Yanur, Yahai, Yawahabo. We just repeat the words Nur, Hai, Wa'abo. Nur coming down, descending into your being, Hai, activating it, brightening it, Wa'abo, letting it fill your being, flow through your being into the world. Yanur. Yahai, Yawahabo. I'm sorry, we're just using the words Nur, Hai, Wahabo. Nur, Hai, Wahabo. Nur. Nur, Hai, Wahabo. Now on the breath, breathe in more, breathe out high, and continue to breathe out wahabo. Breathe in, nor, out, high, and then wahabo. Breathe in, nor, out, high, wahabo. Think of it this way. This image, maybe it will be helpful, maybe it won't be, but it's almost like nor is like striking a match, and then high is like the light grows brighter, or maybe you even light a candle or a sparkler or something. Then it gets even brighter and bigger. A sparkler is a good example, actually. You know the little things you use for celebrations? The light gets big. And then wahabo, you know, when I was a child, we used to play with those sparklers and we'd kind of write in the air. The light would continue to move. You know, maybe use these, maybe this become a little metaphor for you. Or again, striking the match, lighting the lantern, and like the lantern that we had on our webpage when we sent out the message, that light going everywhere. So it's strike it, nur, light it high, and then it goes, scatters with wahabo. Okay? So breathing in, nur, out high, and then wahabo. Breathing in, nur. Out high. Continue to breathe out. Wahabo. In, nur. Out high. Continue. Wahabo. In, nur. Out high. Continue. Wahabo. In, nur. Out wahabo. In nor. Out high. Continue wahabo. Are you shining? Let me look at you. See. Everyone shining? You look pretty bright over there to me. Well, this is it for the day, and I will leave the window open. I just want to remind you of the quote that we had at the very beginning, which was, life is an opportunity given to satisfy the hunger and thirst of the soul. So let us be thankful for our lives. It's precious, precious human life. I'd like for us to close with the Khatum. And I would also ask, I noticed that there have been a few of you that have given through Facebook anonymously, so I can't send you a personal thank you note, but I want to send you my deep gratitude, our deep gratitude for supporting the teachings. And I just got a big bill from our web hosting company, so that helps. I've got another one coming from Zoom. So you help with the spreading the message in that way, and I'm so grateful. And thank you for your continued and loving and generous support. And let us, of course, remember to dedicate this time to all those who need love and life and light in their worlds, in their lives. And we say the prayer Khatum. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls. This is Yanur, thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Men, send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen.